Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We are so grateful that you are here with us. My name is Elizabeth De Jesus. I am a co-director of the North Florida Clean Fuels Coalition, which is hosted by the North Florida TPO. The coalition was established in 2009, was designated as a Clean Cities Coalition by the Department of Energy in 2016, and redesignated in 2022. Our coalition is one of over 80 clean cities in the United States. Our mission is to promote the use of clean fuels to strengthen the region's economic, social, and environmental resilience through education, stakeholder engagement, planning, and strategic investment. We are fuel neutral, which means that we promote equally the use of all alternative fuels, which includes natural gas, propane, electric, biofuels, hydrogen. Through the years, we have been very busy promoting alternative fuels in the region. We have invested over $2.5 million in alternative fuels infrastructure, plans, and studies. We are about to complete our new alternative fuels master plan, which will help guide future investments in the region. Today, we will be talking about the use of liquefied natural gas, LNG, in the port of Jacksonville, Jacksport. We have a fantastic panel. And now I would like to introduce our moderator, Ben Moore, sustainability and resilience leader with RS&H. Ben has been our consultant over 15 years and has a vast experience and knowledge of alternative fuels. Ben, it's all yours.
Thank you, Elizabeth. So welcome, everyone. Really appreciate your attendance today to talk about this topic, which, as Elizabeth mentioned, is all about LNG, liquefied natural gas. We're going to get into what exactly LNG is and what its benefits are in a moment. Before I do, I want to say to you that the North Florida region is a leader in use of clean fuels. We collect data annually on the activity in the region with respect to fleets that are using the various fuels. And our analysis most recently indicates that North Florida is one of the top regions in America when it comes to displacing gasoline and diesel fuels with one of these alternatives per capita. And the reason for that primarily is liquefied natural gas. And its use in the port and logistics industry in Jacksonville. Furthermore, it's probably Jacksonville's best kept secret, but we're hoping that this webinar starts to make it no longer a secret that North Florida is the world's leader in use of liquefied natural gas as a fuel to power logistics, specifically shipping. And so today we have some of the principal players in making that leadership come to reality in North Florida. And I'm going to let each of them introduce themselves as they come into the mix in a second. But as just a highlight of our speakers, we have Jim Wagstaff with Tote Maritime. Tote is a shipper carries cargo between North Florida and Puerto Rico, and also between the Pacific Northwest and Alaska. Rick Shimakase is with Jacksport, and Tote obviously operates through Jacksport. And then we got Robert Butts with Pivotal, and Pivotal supplies the LNG. And that's just putting it lightly. He's going to get into all the details about how that happens. And so we're going to have a conversation. There's no PowerPoints here. We're going to have a conversation about how we came to where we are, how it all unfolds on a day-to-day basis, and what the future might hold with LNG. Before we get into it, I want to just do a little bit of housekeeping. All of us are now very familiar with webinars and how they work. You have a chat function on your screen, and you can use that chat function to ask a question. And I'm going to be monitoring that chat. and encourage you to put the questions in the chat that I can then insert into the conversation. That's useful for folks who are not wanting to disrupt the flow or maybe are a little bit shy about speaking up. Go ahead, put it in the chat. We want to see it there. We'll have 15 minutes at the end to allow you to ask questions, however. So if you want to wait till then, you can do that. But you're part of this conversation too. So please put your questions in the chat or save them to the end. And we're going to make sure that your voice is part of this conversation. So without any further ado, I want to start with Jim and ask the following question. Back in 2012, you first decided that LNG might be a solution. Talk to us a bit about how it became, went from an idea in 2012 to a reality now, where you're anchoring world leadership and use of LNG in your market sector.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. I appreciate the North Florida Clean Fuels invite to this webinar. Thank you very much. Yeah, it started back in 2012, and we were at a crossroads. We had two vessels that were running on heavy fuels, and we had to make a decision which direction we were going to go. We were going to build a vessel that could run on diesel and use scrubbers, which generated waste. And we made the decision we were going to be the first movers in the LNG market. That then went into a design phase and a build phase, and we delivered the first LNG-powered container ship in the world in 2015, put her into service. It was a long path of getting through the regulatory bodies, the how this works, what the design was going to be, the whole design, the engine design. But it all came together in 2015 with the Isla Bella, and then we delivered the Perla de Caribe, which is over my right shoulder, in 2016. It helped us meet TOTE's environmental objectives and put us upon the path to being the most environmental friendly ocean carrier in the world. It also allowed us to meet the IMO regulations. In 2012 is when the announcement was made that we were going to cut sulfur in fuels, and by 2020 that would be a regulation. LNG allowed us to do that. Our mission is to be provide us a safe, reliable, and trusted service to the Puerto Rico economy. LNG has become, quite frankly, the lifeblood of our business.
Jim, you mentioned IMO. For those who aren't familiar, could you describe who they are and why their regulations are important to you?
Yeah, absolutely. IMO is International Maritime Organization, and they are the group that sets international standards of what emissions are going to be. And we knew that if we built a vessel that didn't meet those, we would be doing this again. And so LNG allows us to go meet the regulations as we see them today through 2050.
Gotcha, thanks. So, Rick, I want to move to you. When we were talking about this earlier in the week, you mentioned that the total investment in LNG infrastructure in North Florida at the Jacksport is somewhere between $1 billion and $2 billion. A significant amount of activity went into this behind the scenes. So, representing Jacksport, the place where this is all happening, talk a bit about how, your role in making LNG possible.
Sure. So, it's really nice to be here. The facts are that Jacksport has helped facilitate this process with the TOTE as well as with the Coast Guard and some of our partners in LNG. We personally don't have any monetary investment in this. Our partners at Pivotal LNG and Eagle LNG have put all that money out. But the port's been very involved from the very beginning. And most importantly, in the beginning, was to have community meetings to explain to people how a low risk fuel like this can operate in a port with really in a safe manner. And when people hear of natural gas or LNG, you know, that's the first thing that comes up is trying to understand the risk of any kind, anything happening. So thankfully, Tote did a phenomenal job of startup, and they had some standard procedures in place that really got us off on a really safe and quick route into getting this done every week. So, but it's been nice to have partners. We all frequently talk, and Robert Butts and I with Pivotal, we do quite a bit of these speaking engagements around different conferences and the like. So we're very, very involved.
Rick, you mentioned Rob. Let's go to Rob now. So Rob, we've been talking about LNG. Why don't we start with some first principles? What is it? Well, let's start first with what fuel is it replacing? And then what is LNG?
Sure. Yep. Good morning, everyone. Good day. It's nice to be here. Thank you all very much for attending. Liquid natural gas is liquid natural gas. Imagine the natural gas that comes into your home, businesses, churches, schools here throughout the United States. It is that commodity, natural gas, vapor natural gas. Natural gas is made up of primarily methane. So here at Jacks LNG, our facility here in Jacksonville, Florida, we take that natural gas from Peoples. We run it through a pretreatment system, bringing out some of the contaminants that are in natural gas, and then we liquefy it. We'll take that vapor natural gas from Peoples, liquefy it into a cryogenic state, which turns it into the liquid form, and then we'll temporarily store it until we can get it onto trucks or barges, and then over to Jim and our other maritime customers.
Jim, your screen went dark there. I want to make sure you're still with us.
I don't know if you can hear me, but...
I can hear you, which is all we need.
This is webinar excitement, right? So you lose power and everything goes dark.
Well, so, put. Well, have put.
To jump off and jump back on it.
But we can hear you loud and clear. Well, let's take it up. Let's take it up from where Robert left it. So, you know, you mentioned how your ships were getting older. You needed to replace them. There were new regulations coming down the pike. So let's talk a bit about the fuel that LNG is replacing, and why it was no longer going to be a solution for you.
Yeah. Thanks. For us, it was a decision on, you know, we were going to from a heavy fuel to either a diesel or LNG. And so we made the decision that we were not going to use scrubbers. We didn't want to generate waste. And we had a objective and a desire to be the cleanest in the world as a ocean carrier. And so we made that decision to go down the LNG path. At the end of the day, it's now saved us 120,000 plus metric tons of CO2 annually. And so from that perspective, it met our needs going forward. It allowed us to have a longer pathway on our vessel returns and the life of the vessel. At the end of the day, low sulfur diesel works just fine, right? And our vessels are capable of running both of them. Quite frankly, one will, when the engine's running on natural gas versus diesel, you don't know it unless there's a light on that tells you that it's, and that's exactly what we wanted. We wanted people of Puerto Rico to never know that. Our people would never know. We run a shipping business to Puerto Rico. We don't run ships for fun. Does that make that make sense? You know, we provide a service, and we wanted that service to be reliable, which it is, right? There are some changes, though, in the two. The risk profiles are a little different, right? And so you just got to know how to handle it. You go from a diesel fuel that prevents or emits vapors has a different flammable point to LNG, liquefied natural gas, which is super cold. And it only is flammable at a certain range of air mixture, about 15%. So it's super safe from that perspective, but you just got to know how to handle it being cold.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ben, I would add, you know, as far as displacing other traditional fuels that we know, so imagine all of the high horsepower applications that we have here and enjoy in North Florida. You know, whether it's locomotive engines that are running from Hialeah, Miami to Jacksonville, Florida, they have displaced the use of diesel fuel for liquid natural gas, this Florida East Coast Railway. Likewise, trucking companies, you know, over-the-road trucking companies, really any application that is of high horsepower, even the aerospace industry, liquid natural gas is now being used in lieu of liquid hydrogen as a propellant for rockets. So it's ships, it's trucking, it could even be mining, you know, on-site power generation. You know, our friends down in Puerto Rico, often they'll need to establish on-site power generation, and liquid natural gas can provide that. Imagine any industrial site that doesn't have access to a natural gas pipeline. We have the capabilities to bring in the necessary equipment, bring in the supply of LNG, working with engine manufacturers to provide that power to generate electricity and other things for businesses to operate off the grid, and even for a short time of period until that pipeline can be brought out to that warehouse or that distribution center or that mine.
Thanks, Rob. So, Rick, let's talk about all the infrastructure that exists at Jack's Port to facilitate use of LNG. We talked about this big investment that went into it. What exactly had to be built to make all of this possible?
I will get right on that. Let me make one more point at the end of Robert's comments. The power generation is big. In Puerto Rico, Coca-Cola has a rather large campus that bottles different kinds of things, including wine and juices, as well as Coca-Cola products. And the electrical grid in Puerto Rico is very uncertain and also very, very expensive, probably five times what we pay here in the mainland. And now the whole campus is run on LNG. So these things are really spreading into more and more applications. But back to what you asked. So we have sort of two different ways of handling LNG here at the port. One is Robert Butts has a couple of very, very nice up-to-date. One is brand new barges, which we're glad to have home ported here in Jacksonville. And they come along the far side of the vessel on the channel side. So the vessel, like Jim's vessels, can work full time with all their cargo operations. And it doesn't disturb that business at all. And meanwhile, Robert's barge is basically fueling the vessel as needed. The other operation we have at Talleyrand is run by a company called Eagle LNG. And essentially, they have what's called a microsite. So we have about 500,000 gallons on site, on the terminal, in two large tanks. And it is fueled underground in cryogenic, basically piping. That goes over very close to the ship at the berth. And then they use another hose from that point to the ship itself to fuel up. So it's a stationary facility instead of a barge system. And they do Crowley, which is the other company that goes to Puerto Rico and runs two LNG-powered ships themselves. So that in itself is basically the infrastructure that we have. The one thing that's also helped sort of spread this business is the use of cryogenic ISO tanks, which are basically a 40-foot long tank that can be transported on a ship. And I know Tope Maritime, as well as Crowley, runs these on their ships. They usually fuel up over at Pivotal, and then it can be shipped anywhere in the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, and other places. So.
Yeah, that's kind of where it all started. Rick, we started with ISO tanks and a skid that had four pumps on it. You know, before right. the infrastructure was in place, we had to find a solution to make sure that we could get the from the liquefaction facility into our ship before, you know, the barges and other devices came along. And so we were able to design a skid with four pumps and four tanks sit beside it and able to pump that fuel onto ship, our ship, and has since been used to do other projects that are kickoff projects or support other facilities before the infrastructure is in place. And so that's just another mechanism to get fuel to a you know, waterborne vessel that comes into the mix quite a bit.
Yeah, and if we haven't made it clear, what we're dealing with here is a liquid that is minus 263 degrees. So that in itself is quite challenging.
Yeah, Ben, if I can just tie some of that together too, and talking about a timeline, you know, when we first started bunkering Tope Maritime Puerto Rico ships, you know, as Jim is describing, we've transitioned from using truck to ship solution, meaning bringing in LNG, putting it into a truck, a trailer, and then loading it onto Jim's ships, to bringing Jack's LNG, which Jack's LNG is if you don't know, here in the Northeast Florida quadrant, we're at the base of the north side of the base of the Dames Point Bridge, right there on Dames Point. If you're heading north, you'll see our facility off into the east of the Dames Point Bridge. Happy to provide tours of anyone that would be interested to see that. But since fueling that first Marlin ship, the facility at Jack's LNG opened up in 2018. We brought alongside what a barge named the Clean Jacksonville, which at the time, Jack's LNG was the first of a kind facility anywhere in North America, where we could liquefy natural gas there on the site. We could load it into trailers and ISO tanks. We could also bunker it onto a barge and then transition that. So since 2018, our partners at Jack's LNG has built two 1.3 million gallon bunker vessels. These two bunker vessels are the largest in operation in the United States. One is called Clean Canaveral and the other is called Clean Everglades. And our reach since 2018, we are now authorized to do LNG bunkering to ships from the ports of Savannah, and then by the end of this month to the ports of Miami. So just since 2018 of going into operation, our business has gradually expanding the use of natural gas here in Jacksonville, as well as other ports along Florida and southeast United States.
So just to clarify a couple of things for folks who aren't, for whom a lot of this technology and terminology is new, the ISO tanks, that's how LNG is getting, say, to the Coca-Cola plant in Puerto Rico, correct, Rick?
Yes, that's correct.
And that is how LNG can be used in place of diesel for power production, for example, which is a cleaner and more reliable alternative for Puerto Rico. Now, Rob, you said the word bunkering. Define what bunkering is for everybody who doesn't hear that word every day or thinks it has something to do with taking shelter from bombs and bullets.
Yeah, no, that's hunker down. That's a term we're all familiar with here in Florida. But no, bunkering is the transfer of fuel to, you know, a vessel, a marine vessel. And our partner has invested significant resources to build these two wonderful bunker barges that operate here. And if many don't know, the maritime industry globally is transitioning to these types of vessels. They're called dual fuel liquid natural gas vessels that are being propelled. So the car carriers that are bringing the Volkswagens, the Audis, the Lamborghinis into Jacksonville are being brought in on ships that are using liquid natural gas. Out of Port Canaveral and Port Miami and Port Everglades, cruise ships are now using liquid natural gas as a propellant, a marine fuel in place of those other alternative fuels. Just as Jim described, the purpose is environmental compliance is primary one. And then, of course, economics also. So lots of wonderful opportunities here in Florida and beyond.
I want to dig into the economics in just a second, but Rob, just to clarify, if I understand you correctly, the industrial infrastructure in North Florida, including the barges that you've developed, allows you to reach from take natural gas liquefied in North Florida and take it to Port Canaveral and other locations around within this region, up to Savannah, down to Miami, correct?
That's correct.
So that's quite a reach, and you can, and I think folks can hear like how, from a business perspective, this is allowing, you know, Pivotal to really you know, maximize its investment in North Florida. Let's talk about how it helps Tote economically, Jim. You mentioned the environmental regulations, and of course there's a cost associated with that, and an increasing cost associated with it. You also mentioned that you were already going to replace your vessels, so there was a discussion about how to most cost-effectively make that investment. But talk a little bit more about the day-to-day economics of using LNG and how it helps your business. Because as you said, you're not doing it for fun. You're doing it for fun and economic benefit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so what it gives us is just reliability. It gives us the ability to predictability. Those are and obviously there's a somewhat of a cost impact from the cost of diesel fuel versus LNG. The thing you've got to step back for us, you know, being the first mover, is that we had all that infrastructure cost to burden up front. And so, you know, when we talk about being the first, the first is the first. And so all those things are burdened by the first, right? And so all the goods, the bads, and the evils are burdened by the first. And so from our long-term perspective, I think it gives us stability, it gives us predictability, and it gives us reliability from a cost perspective. There is some cost savings, and I think we'll see that over time in the longevity of the engine, how clean it burns, how less emissions are being put out. And so from, you know, we haven't seen the major cost advantages that a, you know, somebody that was coming online now would see. But I believe we are going to see that over time. We're starting to see that move in our favor.
Rick, let's talk about the benefits to Jaxport, or put another way, you know, the logistics industry in Jacksonville from having this industrial base centered around LNG. I mean, Rob alluded to it, that there are folks who are operating LNG ships abroad who are looking for a port on the East Coast that they can come to and rely upon. Talk a little bit about how that started to direct business towards Jacksonville now and into the future.
So, you know, the two key partners that started all this, Crowley and Tote, they run two LNG ships per week to Puerto Rico. So it gives you a scale of how much cargo is moving down there. And then most recently, the company Siem, which owns two car carriers that are LNG powered, they needed to bring Volkswagens to Jacksonville and also up into Baltimore area. And the only fuel stops for them is here in Jacksonville and Rotterdam, close to Germany. So without this ability to fuel up vessels here, that business just wouldn't occur, and you couldn't develop that trade lane. So it has really put us on the map in a huge way worldwide. And it's a very big promotional advantage that we have here. So we are constantly talking to new customers about bringing more ships through here that are powered by LNG. The other company, NYK, is running ro-ro vessels to basically run for automobiles and trucks. And they are also coming to Jacksonville to fuel up LNG. So it's really been a tremendous promotion for the port. And we're very happy to have such, you know, great partners to work with. We're all very close. We talk frequently, and we have not had really any issues whatsoever, thank goodness.
Circling back to Rob and Rick, feel free to jump in on this question, but a port is not just the vessels, right? The port has all kinds of other operations that are using various kinds of fuels to do its business. Obviously, there's the cranes, and I know there's been a lot of investment in electrifying those at Jaxport.
Correct.
And then there are all the trucks that are taking the cargo from the ships and onto the roads. And then there's the trains that are taking the cargo off the ships onto the rails. And then those are the rail, the trains and the trucks are going to all kinds of locations or wherever the goods are needed. So Rob, talk a bit about how your investment strategy in LNG North Florida serves. You mentioned it a little bit already, but let's go into more detail about how your investment strategy in North Florida serves the land side of the port operation.
Yeah, and that's a great question. You know, from the land side standpoint, you know, every mode of transportation or every piece of logistics, there is a sweet spot for the power to be generated. You know, you mentioned electricity. You know, in some cases, electricity is by far the best approach to generate power. Whereas, as I mentioned earlier, when we get into the heavy horsepower, you know, the 18-wheel trucks, the drayage trucks, the rail, aerospace, certainly marine, those are really the power bands, if you will, that we look to for the use of liquid natural gas. You know, I've been with Pivotal LNG now for 8 years, and I was really surprised and still remain surprised that the trucking industry and other heavy horsepower industries have not picking up as much as I thought. We have a very large parcel delivery company that we're proud to serve throughout the region. And I was surprised that not m more of those partial delivery companies were actually picking up and moving to this new technology of liquid natural gas. But as far as outlook, I'm sorry, Ben, but just as far as outlook, the facility that we have at Jax LNG, we're in expansion right now, and we intend to be in further expansion out to Train 3, which is a production facility. Soon at Jax LNG. So we're anticipating continued growth, more adoption of liquid natural gas as a transportation fuel. And as our parent, which is Berkshire Hathaway Energy, we're looking at beyond the Southeast United States, the Mid-Atlantic and the North, bringing liquid natural gas to more applications.
So that it went by fast for folks, but Rob mentioned a large parcel delivery company. I'll let you guys decide in your own mind who that might be. There's only a few out there in the world, but they're very big and they deliver parcels. And they're using LNG locally. Rob, as the Clean Fuels Coalition, we also wonder, why more truckers aren't able to take advantage of it. And Rick, it's the drayage fleet at the port. It would be great for you to characterize that a bit, and
Sure.
why some it's a target of interest for folks who are interested in clean fuels. And let's talk about some of the challenges about why those things haven't manifested as fast as we would like.
Sure. Well, you know, generally, almost every truck you see out there is running on diesel. Actually, through the cooperation of North Florida TPO, I mean, one of the things they've done is we've had a program in the past which took dirty trucks, basically old technology trucks, off the roads, and we were able to help people finance brand new trucks which run on low sulfur diesel. And so that's a better situation than what we had in the past. But you know, these things, like you said about the electrification, we're doing all of our cranes are moving over to electricity right now. They were running on diesel. That's old technology. So that's kind of like what's happening. As we get into the future, though, I mean, one of the things that's being talked about in Europe a lot and in California is when a vessel stops at a berth at a port, is the vessel needs to keep some engines running for power generation, for lights. And what they're doing in Europe and in California is they're turning those ships off completely, and they basically plug into a port facility to generate power. And I think the future for Jacksonville is we will have power packs run by LNG. And we've already looked into them, and these ships can just plug into that. And so what you have is very, very low emissions while the vessel's in port instead of them running alternative fuels like heavy bunker fuels or diesels. So that would be our best case scenario for our area.
pausing for a moment, one little moment longer on the land side, Rob, what is needed to incentivize the rest of the surface transportation truckers to move towards an LNG fuel? Or if you could briefly describe like how CNG could come into the mix too, given what you've developed there in North Florida, what is needed to make that transition occur?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Incentive, you know, that is the word. You know, a lot of the drayage vehicle trucks, as well as some of the other truck providers that you know serve Jaxport, are mom and pop businesses. You know, they're small business operators. You know, the ability to purchase a new truck with the latest and greatest technology to help reduce the emissions in our port and in our city. Is cost prohibitive sometimes. So I think if there was a program in place, one that continues to promote the use of alternative fuels like natural gas, CNG is certainly a different alternative too that we don't provide, but something to be put in place to help those small business operators to at least consider it, help maybe finance the capital investment in it. We can certainly help develop and provide liquid natural gas for them should they want to use that.
Thanks, Rob. Hey, let's look. We have a question that came in regarding, Rick, your discussion of the vessels when they're in port and how they could be powered alternatively. You
sure.
mentioned using LNG power packs to do that. Other ports have used electricity for that purpose. And Rob, maybe you weigh in on this as well, or Jim, you're welcome too. Mm-hmm. Compare and contrast those two strategies and why you might go one way or the other.
Well, first of all, you know, it's very, very high power. And one of the things that is not existing today is many of these ships do not have basically the plug-in ability today. Very few do. But in order to plug in either electrical or LNG power packs, you need the ability to plug in, and many of these ships just haven't been developed with that option in mind. I think as things are changing now to help the climate and the emission standards, that's something we're all looking at very, very heavily.
Jim,
yeah, I would just
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Jim is certainly the resident expert as it relates to the maritime side. We have numerous maritime customers that do have ships that are capable of taking what we call shore power cables. And I think if you look at it from the like Jim Wagstaff's point of view, you know, the idea is to cut down emissions. So I think they complement each other. The use of natural gas while underway from point A to point B. Right. And then when Jim could put his ships or any ship owner could moor their vessel and turn them off, and not have any emissions, that certainly helps their overall emission profile to help improve, you know, the emissions. But I'd always defer to Jim for those matters.
No,
I might add one more thing, and that is the cost factor, right? So
yeah,
for a vessel to want to plug in, you have to do it at the same price or lower than what it's costing him to run, you know, his engines at the pier. So.
Yeah, on the West Coast, we have two vessels going to Alaska. We shut those off, and we do have shore power that we run those vessels on. So, and on the East Coast, we do not. We have a smaller generator pack that instead of the larger engine running, small generator packs are running off of LNG. So we have both options on both on each coast, or a option on each coast. However, it does come down to cost and outfitting the ships. We do not outfit the ship on the East Coast because, quite frankly, it's not available. And so are you going to spend the kind of money that it takes to prepare a ship to do that when a lot of the ports are not equipped to be able to provide that power? And I think as time goes, as Rick was talking about, that will be our next one of the next phases that we move into, is that that's readily available. And then that infrastructure cost or that retrofit cost will be worth the investment.
Yeah.
It's great to hear how you're looking forward towards that next step. But it's important to remind folks, and I was certainly impressed by the information you shared with me that indicates that this move to LNG has reduced greenhouse gas emissions from your operations, your vessel, 62%.
Correct.
We're certainly interested in the remaining 38. And so let's talk a little bit about the future. Some of the information you share with me, and Rob, definitely want to get your take on this as well, is that you're not standing still. There are other options that are out there for LNG. For instance, LNG sourced from biological sources as opposed to fossil sources. And then I'm really interested in the concept of synthetic LNG. If we could start with Jim, your future plans with respect to this fuel and your decarbonization pathway, both to meet IMO regulations and any other drivers that are moving you forward. And then Rob will get into the technologies of the fuels.
Yeah, absolutely. We continue to move forward looking at bio LNG. Matter of fact, we've used some in our market. There's just not a reliable supply. There's not a big supply at this point. However, we are positioned to go to bio with the mindset that, the next logical step, once bio is up and running and reliable and available from the pig farms, the cattle farms, waste stations, landfills, those types of things, because it's there, we just got to harness it. The next step is that synthetic. And I think we're well positioned to take us to each one of those next steps on this path to decarbonation.
So Rob, let's do some level setting on these future versions of LNG. Let's start with the biologically sourced LNG. Jim was sort of helping us out already with kind of some of its feedstocks, but let's talk a bit more about it and how your company is engaging with them.
Yep, we've have made a few bio or renewable natural gas deliveries, one to Jim and one to a ship owner down in Port Fourchon, Louisiana, to run an offshore platform vessel there. And yeah, as Jim mentioned, you know, the feedstocks for those are here. It's the landfills, it's the animals. And here in the United States, we're working on what is called a credit system. So a producer of bio LNG, or I should say methane, a biomethane, will generate a certificate. And then that certificate by that manufacturer will be put out into the marketplace, and then it can be purchased. And then we can transfer that credit then to, say, Tote Maritime or another user. So as of right now, for our applications, we're not taking in that bio natural gas and then running it through our plant as we would a traditional natural gas.
So there's this credit system, and it's a clever way to encourage the use of these biologically sourced fuels like LNG and allow the benefits to travel far away from where the fuel is actually made. When it's actually made, my understanding is that, as Jim mentioned, some of the feedstocks would include landfill gas, as well as gas captured from dairy operations. And for folks like me who are interested in the sustainability of all these fuels, they're very attractive because the dairy version of RNG is actually carbon negative. Yeah. In other words, by using that fuel, you're actually not only taking your emissions down to zero, but you're it's negative emissions, which is a very attractive idea. And the landfills are not quite as advantageous, but still almost zero emissions associated with them. But at the same time, from a perspective of Pivotal, someone who's providing these fuels, there's a lot of people who want it. The aviation industry would like to have a fuel like that. The shipping industry clearly does. There's lots of folks on the West Coast who want it for a lot of applications as a result of the regulatory scheme out there. So what's the outlook for East Coast use of these kinds of fuels in the near or midterm?
Yeah, they're there now. The opportunity for them is now. But because of that demand on the left coast, in other areas, as well as the, and Jim talked about it, the capacity. It's very expensive right now. And it's almost cost prohibitive to do that type of application. However, that is the future for liquid natural gas. As Jim had mentioned earlier, you know, he has some timelines in place by the International Maritime Organization for his emission standards. So that bio LNG or the synthetic LNG, which is something that I'm still trying to understand how that is actually generated, that will help Jim and other ship owners get beyond regulatory compliance past 2050. So everyone is very much focused, you know, in our area in looking to how we can capitalize the use of bioliquid natural gas, especially the animal, as you mentioned, and then other derivatives of it in the future.
So we know that the synthetics are on the horizon beyond the biological sources. And I was pleased to hear you say that you're still trying to figure out how it's going to be produced, because I certainly am confused by it. And I'm sure many of our listeners maybe never have heard about it, but my simplistic reading of it is that this is basically LNG that is harvested from the air. And it seems incredible in science fiction, but Rob, could you describe just at a high level what we're talking about, so people can all learn something from about the synthetic version of LNG?
Well, I've not spent much time on it, so I'm not necessarily the expert authority on synthetic natural gas. You know, much like other fuel sources, a lot is being developed. You know, whether it's ammonia or, you know, other fuel sources, this is just one of the many different applications that are coming to the future and providing alternative fuels. So, unfortunately, I'm not the expert and can't provide much clarity on it, Ben.
Okay.
But, hey, Ben, no, I can talk about something new. There's a plan C, or option C, and that is there's a company that has developed a filtration system that is added to an existing ship that's running on LNG, and it basically filters out the carbon out of the exhaust. And that therefore it is compliant beyond 2050. And the actual item is the carbon type product that comes out of it, the residue, is then collected and can be basically put on the ground, you know, at different ports, discharged. It's currently running at about between 5,000 and 7,000 a ton per ton. So it has quite a bit of value. It's a very clean carbon product for other like filtration systems and the like. So I do not know how much that machinery costs to install on a vessel. And it's back to what if it's cost prohibitive or it's doable. But there are a lot of different branches of research going on right now to get to that 2050 point way before then. So
it's definitely an interesting time to be alive when a lot of the assumptions that we've made about how to get from A to B are being totally questioned. And the things as basic as what you're putting in your tank are is going to be totally transformed. And it's great to find out that that stuff is started in North Florida, where I'm from, and that you know that part of the world is leading in this area. And it's going to be great to find out and watch how this all develops. We've got just about 10 minutes left, and I want to allow folks to just speak up and ask questions. Those of you who are online and listening, you're on mute, but you're more than welcome to unmute yourself and ask a question. You can also put the question in the chat and I'll ask it for you. And I want to pause now to let that happen. And if it takes some time to get people rolling into the questions, I have more, but let's let me stop for a second and let others join the conversation if they wish. No need to be shy. You can use the chat if you are shy. I'm watching it. And I've been able to throw some questions into the mix from the chat. So while we wait for the first brave person to speak up, I'm going to ask another question. And that has to do with why or what is special about North Florida that this happened here and not, say, in the Pacific Northwest, where TOTE also operates, or somewhere else along the East Coast.
Yeah, from my perspective, we pretty much did that simultaneously. We did West Coast and we did the East Coast at the same time. We made that decision to convert our existing vessels, the Orca class vessels on the West Coast, at the same time. But that was the transition of the engine itself. Those were vessels that were running. They had 8 to 10 years on them. And so that technology had to be developed to do those conversions, where we had a clean slate to work with. And then from that perspective, the discussion started about where do you get the fuel? And that's where we started the relationship with Pivotal. And then from there, it went to how do you get it to the ship? And then what's a better way to get it to the ship? So it's just been a progression. And then, quite frankly, our friends over at Pivotal have stepped up to the pump, and I'd be remiss not to give the Coast Guard a lot of credit. Those guys were incredible to work with. They were open to new technology, and they wanted it to happen. So being in this regulatory heavy environment, I can't say that a lot, but those guys really stepped up to the pump and pushed us forward into the market. And then it's I think it's the chicken and the egg, right? So you've got to have the demand. We created the demand, and then it was the supply, and that's the way it started moving forward. And then then folks were not shy to invest in something that we believed in. We knew it worked.
We did have a question come in. Thank you. And maybe Rick, you can handle this one. So we've been fortunate to have Jim with TOTE and Rob with Pivotal LNG on the line here. We don't have the folks from Eagle LNG, and we don't have the folks from Crowley who represent another aspect of this industry in North Florida. But Rick, the question is, what's the status of Eagle LNG's liquefaction plant on the old Bostwick property? And maybe just more generally, since they're not here to talk about it, if you could just kind of characterize the Eagle side of things a little bit more and how Crowley is working with them.
Sure. Yeah. Well, basically the system that Eagle has put in place is they have a liquefaction facility at Cecil Field about, I guess, 20 miles from here. And they bring by ISO tank trucks the fuel over to our micro site here at Talleyrand at the port. There they have two large storage tanks. They're building actually more capacity as we speak. And then they can then fuel the ships, Crowley ships, right on the pier. Most recently, and within the next couple of weeks, we will be seeing a new chartered vessel, which will accept LNG for bunkering. And it's a small ship, but it's in similar to what Robert's company has done, and that is done it on a barge and system. This is an actual vessel, and it'll be doing some fueling in the Bahamas, but we'll be the origin point for the fuel itself to be loaded onto that ship. And they're going to do some small scale bunkering in the Bahamas out of here. So they're developing things in the future. Back to demand, I mean, they do have property available on the St. John's River. And they've been doing some survey and things like that. Robert can talk a lot more about this, but the certification process from beginning with dirt and ending with an LNG facility is a long, long path of many, many things. And it takes a long time to get it done. So, I mean, that's still their plan, but that's so far, this is what we have.
Okay, and a question came in. This is just, I guess, a clarification. This is for Rob. You are providing LNG to operators at Port Canaveral, correct?
Yes.
And who are those entities?
A major cruise company.
Okay.
That is based here in Florida.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Another question I've got is I guess this would direct us to Rick and then Rob. Like, okay, so there's been, somewhere between $1 and $2 billion invested. Jim mentioned how, as first mover, he's certainly benefiting from it, but others could benefit even more because they haven't had to make that investment. And I'm sure Crowley and Eagle feel the same way about that. But from Rick, your perspective, who is sleeping on this opportunity to benefit from all this investment in LNG? What kind of, who needs to be really looking hard at leveraging this for their business?
I think trucks are a big untapped area. I've spoken to one company. They have an operation near in Georgia that basically right now does conversions of trucks from diesel to compressed natural gas. And they're looking to flip that to LNG also. And basically they would accept a truck and do the whole conversion and finance it for a owner operator. So they're looking at property in and around Jacksonville right now because the LNG is available here to do that same thing. And if that were the case, and it's a reasonable amount of money, I would like to see a lot more of our drayage trucks as well as over the road trucks being fueled with LNG here locally.
Rob, I'm sure you'd like the same thing. But if I could have you, when you answer this question, think beyond North Florida to other parts of the world, or to your sphere of operation as a businessman. Who is sleeping on this technology, generally speaking, and where would be the next place to do something like this?
Yeah, I think well, like Rick mentioned, the over the road trucking is one. I mentioned that before that I was surprised it just hasn't picked up. And but to their defense, it's just like all of us on this line. We look at what type of transportation suits us and what is the power source. Many of us have electric vehicles. Some of us don't. Some of us have just made those choices. And based upon the transportation companies, it's based upon their logistics, their routes, their time, their servicing requirements. I don't fault them. However, the infrastructure is continuing to grow, and we would invite them to come back and actually look at liquid natural gas and could it now, some maybe 5, 6 years later, now serve their needs. Along the US East Coast, of course, I'm always focused on the marine aspects of it. And I mentioned earlier, we are owned by Berkshire Hathaway Energy. And we have some facility along the US East Coast that we would certainly like to leverage and bring more liquid natural gas to the maritime market. So, serving that Chesapeake Bay area as well as the Northeast and Norfolk, excuse me, New York, Philadelphia. Those regions is really important to us, and we're concentrating on that pretty hard to bring more liquid natural gas to market.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Rick. So, when it comes to getting the message out and helping those drayage trucks or the other surface transportation folks, revisit this opportunity, we, the North Florida Clean Fuels Coalition, are your partners for that, and we look forward to working with you on those kinds of opportunities. And with that, I'm gonna start to wind things down. And thank you so much for your time today and taking us through this topic, Rob, Rick, and Jim. Really appreciate it. I want to review some of the things we've learned today. I mean, one thing we've learned is that North Florida, on a per capita basis, is one of the nation's leaders in displacing gasoline and diesel fuel use with clean alternative fuels. And the main driver of that for North Florida is liquefied natural gas. That liquefied natural gas opportunity is a result of major investment by folks like Jim at Tote and Rob at Pivotal, and has led to this region being the world's leader in clean shipping. And so the next step is just to continue to leverage that investment for the benefit of this region. And that's why the North Florida Clean Fuels has brought this panel together today, because we want to help make that happen. So, with that, I'll close things out. I want to thank everybody who attended today. Hope this was educational, and look forward to being with you next time. When we come to you next, we'll be talking about something different. We won't be talking about LNG. We might be talking about electricity. We might be talking about propane. We might be talking about biofuels. We're fuel neutral. We're working on promoting all the ways that fleets can save money and improve the health and environmental outcomes of their operations through clean fuels. Thanks so much, everyone, for being here today.